I'd like to thank the readers. And at this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Leroy.
Morning, I'm an addict. My name is Leroy. And I'm nervous. It's surprising there's this many dope fiends awake this early in the morning. And it was a tough time for me getting up. I was told about my topic a couple of weeks ago. And as far as figuring out how I was spiritually fit and glad to be alive, I was having a tough time figuring that out. The basic text has about two sentences on it in the end of the 12th step. The "it works how and why" doesn't actually have that phrase written in it, but the concept is in the 12th step. What I come to, the more I thought about it, is the reality is, when I got here, I thought being spiritually fitter, when I heard about being spiritual, all I could think about was in fifth grade, we used to get dropped off at this church, and we were to go to Sunday school. And then when things were going okay at the house and Mom and Dad were actually together, we would all go to church together. And I got to carry the money up and down until I stole the money and got caught. And then I got to take the money that I had stolen plus the ladies' wallets back to these people and make amends to them. You know? And so I had an idea of that God had it with my God was a punishing God, because I got my ass whooped. And it wasn't God that did it, it was Mom and Dad, but the deal was is that it happened at church, and I kind of related the two together, and I wasn't too spiritually fit when I got here, and I really did not like the idea of having to have this, and this is my idea, that I was going to have some kind of religion in my life. Luckily, somebody told me that it wasn't about being religious, that it was that the spirituality was a whole different deal, and that once I got a sponsor, I would be able to figure this out. What it was like for me, when I got here, I had been through a whole bunch of things. You know, the deal when I was in fifth grade, I went through a marriage being quite unspiritual. When my second child was born, I did not come home regularly. Actually, I barely came home until the house was empty one day, and it was what I wanted. I played the field and was very comfortable with it. My addiction was running rampant. My drug of choice was whatever could be gotten, and I acted the fool. But what I felt to be the worst thing about it was that I couldn't find anything in here. You know, no matter where I went, the women I would hook up with, the people I would hang out with, whatever I stuck in my body, it never fixed what was in here. And I did not have a clue to that. I just knew I was seeking for more. I joined everything I could ever join. You know, if there was a group of guys riding motorcycles and I could hook up with them, I'd join them. I would do whatever they told me to do. I spent time in the service. I went in for 4 years. It took me six to get out. I figured kids would help. You know, kids didn't help. Being married didn't help. Owning property didn't help. To my knowledge, working didn't help. You know? Now, I always thought I was gainfully employed because I always had a job, but the real deal is the only job I held for any length of time was in the Navy, and that's because I couldn't do anything about it. Once I got out of the Navy, I couldn't hold a job for more than about 2 years. And if it was 2 years, it was a miracle. It usually lasted about a year, and something would catch up with Leroy. About the time the lease was due on wherever I was living, it was time to find a new job. This continued on. I was introduced to the rooms of recovery via another member, my late father-in-law. My first wife's father was in recovery. And he would do my taxes for me, and he would tell me the insanity of my ways by showing me how much money I had endeavored to spend on my head and wasn't doing anything with. And, you know, that wasn't a big deal. It really didn't bother me. This was working for him, and I didn't need it. you know, that I'm not with that wife. I haven't been with that wife for 15 years. I have been with other women since, and the problem did not go away. The problem got larger. My spirituality got worse and worse and worse. It got to a point where I would steal from the kids, from whoever, whatever woman I was living with, I'd steal from her kids. Not just her, but I'd steal from her kids. I would steal from her mother. I would steal from my job. And I would not, and it would get to a point where I could rationalize all these things in my own head. It was okay. I needed this to get by. I needed this to cop, to do whatever I was getting by. I moved to a place that created the drug of my choice, and it had a bar on every corner, and they made my drug of choice in town, and I was in heaven. And I lived there for about 10 years. And and this was the road to my near death during those 10 years. I started doing things that I never thought I would do. I had fallen off of motorcycles a lot. I finally fell off of one at a high rate of stupidity and broke my back in 88. And when I got out of the hospital, they had put me together to where I could walk, and they told me I never would. When I got out of the hospital, I went back in not too long a time to where I was before. So it didn't teach me anything. What got me to the rooms was a sequence of different things happening. First, the court sent me. And I went because the court sent me. And that's the only reason I went. I found out real quick I could sign my own sheets and go in and tell them that I went. I saw the list of meetings. I went to these meetings. Here's the people's names. Have a nice day. And but I heard people that were in here that were recovering and that were living different lives. And I saw people that I had seen during my using that had disappeared. And it didn't make any big deal whether they disappeared, but all of a sudden I'd see them there, and I said, well, I was wondering where you were. So I've been here for about 3 or 4 years. And life's real good. Please keep coming back. Okay. I was 36 years old, and the woman I'd been living with for almost 10 years came back from a ski trip and said, Lura, you need to pack your shit up and get. I said, okay. So I packed this as little as I could and went to this really nice hotel with 7 deadbolts and a shared bathroom on 4 floors. And I paid my $35 a week, and I was once again in heaven, because it was right down from the dope man's house, and it was 2 blocks away from work, and I could roll into work late, or they could come by and actually wake me up. I could come home and work up what I needed to do to get through the day on people's road tests, because I worked on cars for a living, and I would drive your car to wherever I was going to get high. Yeah. And I'd wreck your car too. It wouldn't be a problem with that. And so she told me to get out. And I would keep going back over this house that I owned, and I would get a shirt, a pair of pants, whatever I needed to go and do whatever I needed to do. And I was coming down here to see my kids for Easter in 92. And now I saw my kids the day after everything, the day after their birthday, the day after Christmas, the day after they were supposed to have been there and I was supposed to have been there to see it. I saw them the day or two after, and I dealt with it for 1 or 2 hours. I could not handle whatever the hell it was I was supposed to handle. I went in to get some clothes to come down to see my kids, and she says, you know, you need to get the rest of your shit out of here and don't come back. I said, well, okay, well, when I come back from seeing the kids, I'll get the rest of my shit. You know? And at this point, I had been stalking. You know, if it makes any sense, I had a regular sight on what was going on. This was in the coal regions up in Pennsylvania, and I had figured out that I could sit up on a mountain with a scope and watch the house. And with one shot, I could do 2 things. And it was, you know, I just wanted to take them both out. But there was nothing wrong with Leroy. You know, so I come down here. On the way out the door, she says, maybe you should do what my sister did and go to one of those detox things. Now, this woman was a registered nurse, worked in the emergency unit, had worked on me many times in the emergency unit, and was right up there with me on everything we did. You know, we would do things side by side together for a long time. And then I started doing things by myself because she was cutting into my shit. But she told me to go to a detox. My head said, Leroy, if you go to a detox, you'll get everything back. She'll let you back in the house. This guy that's visiting now will go away. And everything will be just fine. So I came down here and told my family that I was going to go into a detox. And I've got a sister that loves me dearly that it ain't no fucking way. And began to tell me how crazy I was. And it was about time that I did this. And she'd been praying for me for years to do this. And what was I going to do next? I said, I don't know. She said, well, let me call Mom. And my mom at the time was a U.S. Marshal. And, you know, she didn't believe me. I had used her services quite a few times for getting a lawyer. Now, she wouldn't, she called me once and told me to move. And then a couple of times I called her and got lawyers. And she always hooked me up with a good lawyer. But one of her biggest fears is she was going to have to arrest me at some point in time. And, you know, I didn't have that fear. She did. But she knew that if she didn't get my dumb ass into a detox, that I would go back to Pennsylvania and remain high. So she got on the phone and found a place to take me. I did have insurance. They found a place up in Maryland. I went to the Shady Grove, the Nut Ward. They asked me if I was thinking about suicide, and I said I really didn't give a shit if I lived or died. And at that point, I didn't. I had already figured out in my head that I had an older sister that died in a car accident, and I had seen the family go through that tragedy. And that tragedy would have been less than if I put a bullet to my head. It would be less of a mess because the wrecker would just take the vehicle away and the morgue would take me. And I wouldn't be a big cleanup. So I had already figured out as even where I could pull out in front of a tractor trailer. And in my life, I just couldn't do it. I didn't have enough in me to do it. But I did have those thoughts. I went to this detox and they told me in a detox everything that they tell you in detoxes. And, you know, they didn't have a fucking clue. They didn't know that I could get everything back that I was told. My head had told me that I was going to get back. They told me to stay the hell away from this woman. They told me to go to meetings every day. They told me to get an aftercare program. They told me to find a sponsor. And they told me to do what the people in these rooms are doing. Now, luckily, they made me go to meetings in this detox. And I was one of the fortunate few that wasn't doing the Thorazine shuffle going to the meetings, so I actually heard what was going on. And I heard people talking about having links of clean time. And it amazed me. You know, at first I thought that it was bullshit, that there was no way that somebody could be clean. You had to have done something, like just a couple volume now and then, or, you know, you had to do something to make it this long. And the guy told me after the meeting, he said, no, man, you don't do anything. And it's not the amount of time I have today. I didn't do anything one day. And then the next day, I didn't do anything the next day. Excuse me. I got out of the detox. I got in my car and I headed right to Pennsylvania. I got up there and I checked into this aftercare program I had set up via the phone. And because I owned the house in one township and I was living in a hotel in another township, I no longer qualified for the aftercare. It was free, but, you know, I didn't qualify, so I didn't have to go. You know, I didn't need it. I needed it to get out of the detox. So I went ahead and did Leroy's thing. They did give me a meeting list at the aftercare thing. And so I did go to a meeting. And I started seeing more people that had disappeared from the bars and the dope houses. And they told me I need to get a sponsor. They told me I needed to stay away from this woman. They told me I needed to stay out of the bars. So I get done with the meeting, I go to the bar and shoot pool and feel left out. And I go up on top of the mountain and watch the house. And I was going crazy. Finally, I had a good buddy of mine come up and tell me, he says, you know, Leroy, you need to get your dumbass back down to Virginia before you do something you can't take back. And I had been offered an apartment at my sister's house, and this is the one that had a god and a real nice apartment with a kitchen and everything in her basement. And I had been offered an apartment from my mother. This is the one who had the cops. And she had five apartments in this house in Alexandria. And I figured, well, I'll take mom's. I get further away. You know? And that was the reality of it. It wasn't because I wanted to live, figure out who my mother was, because I hadn't been dealing with her since I was 17, 20 years. I figured that I would move into this attic and I would be okay. And I moved in there, and I started going to meetings in this area, or in Northern Virginia area. And I stumbled into a Step in Traditions meeting, and they started reading about the steps. And it seemed like every week they were on the fourth step. And I think they were doing that for my benefit. Reality was is I must not have been going there every week. But I was going there enough to hear people talking about the steps. And I was going there enough and seeing the same people from that meeting and other meetings and seeing that they had been able to stay clean by doing these things called the steps. And so I asked this guy, you know, here I am, I'm 10 foot tall and bulletproof. I've broken almost everything. I've been able to walk up to people anywhere and ask them. I was stationed in Iceland for 2 years, and I got high in Iceland. You know, so I've been able to go anywhere and get high. And I can't walk up to a guy at a meeting and say, would you sponsor me? Now, this is he would be the second sponsor I had had. I had to get one to get out of the detox, so I had one right at detox and never used them. I walked up to this gentleman and I asked him to sponsor me. And I asked him to sponsor me because of the way he talked at this step meeting, the way he talked about using his sponsor, the way he talked about using his God. And I had a clue that I didn't know what a God was. I did not know how to pray. I did not know how to use a God. I certainly didn't know much about these steps. I had done the first three. And I had been told by a roommate in the detox that I was figuring on doing 12 in 12 days, and that if I did one a year, I was doing good. He said I needed help with them, so I just looked. They were for you guys. I didn't need them. I finally figured out that I needed to talk to this guy. And, you know, I'd like to tell you that I called him right away, and I started working the steps, and I didn't. I neglected to tell you that while I was in detox, I picked up another chick. And she lived in Maryland. And so I would... Since Pennsylvania wasn't working out, it was a good reason to move back down here. I had a place down here in Maryland shooting dope. And so I carted that back to detox two times by myself because I'm 10 foot tall and bulletproof. And the dope's looking real good each time. And the third time, I get this brain fart. Call your sponsor. So I called my sponsor and I said, William, I don't know what to do. He said, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to take her to detox. He said, well, hang on, I'll be right over. And he went with me to take this woman to detox. And he said, do you like this girl? I said, yeah. I said, well, do you love this girl? I said, I don't know. He said, well, why don't you do the two of you a favor and leave her the hell alone and let her survive. Maybe she'll live through this. And maybe you can get some recovery. And so I did that. It took a little bit more time for me to start calling him on a regular basis. At that time, he put me on the first step, and he had me do something. And my sponsor has me right on the steps. I understand the only wrong way to do the steps is to do them by yourself. But my sponsor has me ride on them. So I started riding on the first step, and it took time to get through it. I started riding on the second, it took time to get through it. The third, it took time to get through that. And the fourth, and I was getting ready to celebrate a year, and a guy asked me to sponsor him, and man, I got all testy, and this is cool. And I asked my sponsor, and he said, okay. And then about a month later, my sponsor asked my sponsee if my fourth step was done. And so I finished my fourth step. And I went on through the fifth and the sixth and the seventh. And each time I went through a step, I would finally start learning about these things called the spiritual principles of this program. You know, I can't tell you today what they are. List them. I do know that they're written in the 12th step. I think it's on page 50 in the basic text. I do know that they do work in my life today if I practice them. I do realize that for me, that's the spiritual awakening I've come to as a result of working the steps in my life, that I do not have to get into a customer's car and look through everything and say, well, they didn't really need this. And, you know, he's got two phones. He doesn't need both of them. And I don't need to take customers' cars for joyrides or keep them overnight. I don't need to steal from my wife. I don't need to steal from my kids. I don't need to steal from my mother. That I'm okay going up and telling people, such as my children and my ex-wife and my mother and my sisters, of some of the wrongs that I've done, and apologizing for them, and telling them that my intent is not to act that way again. And proof of that is to be able to remain here day after day and do it, live it, not just say it, but live it. The spiritual awakening for me is you know, when I got here, all I could think of was taking my own life. Then after a while I was here, all I could think of was taking your life. And today, it's okay if we both live. You know, I'm not always okay with Leroy. I'm not always okay with you, but it's okay that we both live. I understand that it's not my place to do that deed. You know, so I'm okay with being glad to be alive. Today, this morning, I'm glad to be alive. The fucking shower didn't work. I will never stay where I'm at today because it has no remote. The shower don't work. It's either hot or cold. I'm not okay with that. You know, so I know that next time I come up here, I'll stay at a different hotel. But I got up and I'm looking out the shower window and I'm looking at the ocean. And my sister passed away at Virginia Beach, and I have this thing about the beach and my sister, and we talk to each other there. And it's been 19 years, and it still goes on. The deal is I got to look out the window and see the beach and feel good. I do have a God in my life today. I do have an understanding of why I'm here and what I'm trying to do while I'm here. And I do understand that the most important thing I can do and what feels the best is to reach out and help another suffering addict. Because by working this program, I have been given something and I have a debt to repay. And the debt I have to repay is to freely give what was freely given to me. Now, I don't have to run up and help somebody that doesn't want to be helped. I found out that doesn't work. I do have to be willing to reach out to help the hand that has reached out to me. And I do have to be willing to be understanding that if that hand comes back two or three times. I have had to learn that since I've been here. But I do understand that my spiritualism today is the God of my understanding. It may not be the God of your understanding. It is my spiritual awakening that has happened as a result of doing all of the crazy things I've done in my life, coming in here and doing some stupid things in here, living through it, and being able to say, yes, this is what I did, and I will try not to do it again. Understanding it, owning it, and trying to go on. And I'm not trying to shoot myself today, and I don't want to shoot you. I am glad to be alive. It is a beautiful day. Somebody lent me a motorcycle to come up here. You know, I used to have to steal motorcycles to ride them. And somebody actually, a guy that's not even in the program, a guy I work with, says, well, why don't you borrow my bike? I threw it on the back of my pickup truck and drug it up here and went riding all day yesterday. Not even my motorcycle. What a great day. You know? Now, if it had been 7 years ago or six and just over 6 years ago, this guy wouldn't have lent me nothing. And he sure as hell wouldn't have showed me where the keys were. So, thanks for letting me share.
I'd like to thank Leroy for sharing with us. And at this time, I would introduce our second speaker, Ms. Peggy.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Peggy.
And I am truly glad to be alive this morning and spiritually refreshed, but this is not a Jones. I have the flu. And I've been sick the whole time I've been here. And it's amazing to be standing in a place where I know that it's going to pass. You know, that I don't have to do anything to fix it. But I'm feeling real powerless. And, you know, I'm like Leroy. I really don't do topics. All I really have to share with you guys is my story. And for me, that's the process of going from being in a place where I didn't want to live. To not only wanting to live today, but understanding that my life can have quality. It's going from being the most negative human being in the world and blaming everybody else to really understanding that my God gives me what I want sometimes, and usually I'm not ready for it, but most of the time gives me just exactly what I need. You know, that I have the choice today to look at that glass as being half full or half empty. And I'm choosing to look at it as being half full. You know, and the thing about Narcotics Anonymous is, you know, as long as I don't pick up, I get to learn new stuff. And that is becoming so exciting. Like this morning, Angela is wearing the same jacket as me. You know? So that's a seven-step experience. And I get to share with a guy named Leroy, and he's a white guy. You know, I mean, I get to learn this stuff. And I thought stalking was just when you came over uninvited. You know? But I do know that I am so grateful to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm not going to tell you a long drug log. There's lots of people in here who know my story. But I do remember when I got here. And I didn't go to treatment. And, you know, I'm the grateful recipient of a 12-step call. And I'm really grateful that that was my first experience with the 12-step, because I got to understand very early on that you people really were going to love me until I could love myself. When I came to NA, I had been using for about 30 years. I had two children that I abused horrifically as a direct result of this disease. I had been married twice, you know, and I heard Leroy say it, you know, through the process of the steps, I really do understand that the common denominator in that story was me, you know, because I have one ex-husband who's white, one ex-husband who's black, you know, and I've had to really look at that during the inventory process. I have one white child, one biracial child, and, you know, what my sponsor and I have come to is that, for real, I'm just an equal opportunity codependent. You know, it was me showing up every single time, and those guys didn't do nothing to me. So I got here, you know, and our literature talks about failed institutions and death. You know, and I'm thinking I might have been able to stay out there longer if I could have turned myself into mom. You know? I didn't go to jail, and I didn't go to institutions, but death was like snapping at my heels when I got here. I always tell people I hadn't lost everything. I still had a husband and lived in a reasonably good neighborhood and actually owned a Cadillac, but I couldn't drive it because there were these munchkins and dwarfs living in the back seat. You know? I was completely schizophrenic when I came. You know, if a man said to me, I want to see other people, I could just say, well, pick one, motherfucker. You know? I was the lady you wouldn't have sat next to on the bus. And where my disease took me was into a closet, cutting myself to let the bugs out from under the skin, out from under my skin, spraying myself all over my body with rage, you know, completely out of my mind and really, really sick. So, you know, narcotics honestly being a choice, like some people talk about, I believe God got me here, y'all. Because I couldn't hear the literature, and I couldn't see you people. I have lost my eyesight. But I just remember going to that first meeting. I got clean on Martin Luther King's birthday in 1987, and it was sleeting. You know, and I can remember trying to get all dressed up in white, like y'all would think I was a virgin. You know, I kind of had this feeling, you'd know I was an addict. You know, and this little girl who grew up, you know, in Catholic schools, getting her butt whipped by nuns, thinking, you know, I'm going to hell because I ate a million hamburgers on Friday. You know, God would, you know, I could sing you the High Mass in Latin, never even looked at what those words said. Had been lying and cheating and stealing for so long behind trying to chase that rush. And so I know that God interceded in my life. That's the only reason that phone call that I made, I didn't make that phone call. You know, and a member of Narcotics Anonymous came and got me and took me to that meeting, and I fell out of my chair in that meeting. You know, all this spiritual stuff, I didn't know the difference between spirituality and religion. You know, I thought that my father used to say things to be like, you know, you're going to do great in hell, all your friends are going to be there. But I do know that when I fell out of that chair, you know, because I was real sick at that first meeting, that y'all picked me up off the floor and put me back in my seat and said, please keep coming back. And for the first time in my life, you know, as embarrassed as I was and as much pain as I was in, I could feel it. You know, it wasn't a pontificating word thing. It was a thing that I could feel. You know, I hear people say that they came here and went in and out and thought, you know, that y'all were using. I knew y'all weren't using, because I could see the sparkle in people's eyes, even through all that madness and all that blindness. And I could feel what this program is. And, you know, I couldn't hear anything y'all read, but I heard one guy say in that first meeting, you don't have to live like that anymore. And I didn't know what was in store for me. But all I wanted was for the pain to stop. You know, there was still some money left. I wanted to stop beating my children. I wanted to stop acting like a maniac. I wanted to stop seeing things that weren't there. You know, I wanted to stop naming my hallucinations. I wanted to stop putting drugs in me and still having the pain come through the pores anyway, you know. And I believe that God and you people just kind of moved me along in that journey. And so for me, you know, I can't tell you that I was honest when I took the first step. I'm the kind of woman who believes eyeshadow is free, you know. But I surrendered. You know, I surrendered. And second day I was in the program, somebody said, that woman is going to be your sponsor, because she picked up her one-day chip 9 months pregnant. See, I didn't think any other women used like I used. I didn't think I could come in here and tell you all that I used when I was pregnant, that I had almost killed my children, you know? And what my sponsor said was, go to a meeting every day. Don't pick up no matter what. You know, and if you don't put it in you, you can't get high. I was like, I should have had a V8. That was like the most complicated philosophical principle. You mean if you don't use, you don't? Wow. But anyway, so I started going to meetings every day. I got up under her, you know, just like they say. And she used to make me, like, think of a positive thing. I was like, huh? You know, she said, you got to get in service. I was like, service? So She said, and you know, I got here because I hit bottom, and it was emotional, and it was spiritual, and it was physical, and also I stole a lot of money. And, you know, so when she told me to get in service, she said, you know, we don't want you to sit up front. You know, and what I'm telling you is that the first step for me was about surrender, and the second step was a whole bunch about hope and open-mindedness. You know, that if this woman who had done the same thing to her kids that I had done could stay clean, maybe so could I. You know, and if I did the things that she did, maybe that would ensure that. And that's what she kept telling me. And so I'm not going to talk to you about a lot of anything. I already told you I was a nutcase. You know, I did all the things y'all did. But she said, you can't sit in the front of the room and be like a chairperson. Well, you have cute clothes. You stole them all. We don't want that. She said, you can't count any money, maybe never again, because you just stole all this lottery money from your husband, and he's going to kill you. But what I want you to do, what we want you to do is make coffee. And I was like, coffee? You know, I'm not the kind of woman who ever did anything nice for anybody else or ever did anything without strings attached. I mean, for real, I think I gave birth with strings attached. You know what I'm saying? Because maybe you could just hang on to him for a little longer. You know, maybe you could make him give you all the money and then you could dole it out. You know, those kind of things. And so I took this coffee-making job and at Suburban Hospital. I got clean in the D.C. area of N.A. and went to Suburban Hospital in Bethesda and took this coffee-making job, and just because she said to, and I just didn't want to hurt anymore. And you all kept telling me, if you just don't use, you're not going to have to go through this withdrawal but this one time. And every day I just keep coming back, you know, and women would hold me down in my chair, and I'd be picking lint off the guys next to me like a mother gorilla, you know. I mean, and you all say, go make this coffee. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this coffee thing. And it was a huge meeting, and I broke two of NA's coffee pots on the carpet in the lobby of Suburban Hospital. And this is spiritual, what I'm telling you, and you all said, keep coming back. You know, I thought you would throw me out, you know, but you didn't. And there was a detox upstairs, and I didn't know what you were supposed to do with that bag with the coffee in it. And I'm 40 years old. I can't make coffee. I think I know everything. And so I would try to put the coffee grounds down the bathtub and screwed up the plumbing and the detox. And you all said, please keep coming back. You know, I have run away from things that have embarrassed me or I couldn't do perfect the first time my whole life. If I can't do it perfect, I just run. I say, fuck you and run. You know, and then blame it on you. You did something. I blew out the power in the intensive care unit like 4 times. And you all said, keep coming back. I would go home after this coffee thing every Friday night crying and crying and call my sponsor. I said, the coffee wasn't ready, or I blew out the bed. She said, okay, baby, next week go an hour earlier. And so it ended up I had to go like at 4:30 in the afternoon to make coffee for the 8:30 meeting. I told you I was whacked. And finally there would be there's some people in the room that remember, there were these Bethesda boys. There's these like upwardly mobile dope fiends in that meeting, and they had like haircuts and mousse and Rolexes and silk shirts and Porsches. I'm serious. That's one reason I stayed. I never got that. But anyway. And they'd walk by and go, where's the decaf? And I'd go, fuck you. This is not the Hyatt Regency. Clean that shit up. And you people said, please keep coming back. And what I'm trying to tell you is that there were a couple things I wanted my whole life. And one of them was to be accepted for exactly who I was and where I was at. And I wanted to be a part of something good. And through that coffee-making position, that's what I got. Y'all said you were going to, I mean, you didn't throw me out. And when the fog started to lift, the people in that group started to encourage me to share about my feelings, you know? And I started to feel that. And it didn't have anything to do with a God that I could define. It didn't have anything to do with right or wrong. It didn't have anything, you know, it was like, and I got to tell you today, that coffee-making job and you people loving me through it has taught me how to show up for every other event in my life since. You know, I am so blessed that I had a sponsor who told me you do this thing from the ground up. You know, those suggestions that my sponsor gave me became the practice of the second step. You know, I want to go to a meeting every day and feel better, or do I want to do it my way? And I, you know, I went to meetings every single day. And I still go to meetings almost every single day after 11 years. I didn't pick up. Relapse has not been a part of my story. But I started to have these things happen in my life that made it necessary for me to move on through the steps. And for me, that has been the process of becoming grateful, becoming spiritually refreshed. Not like I was ever spiritual. We're talking about a whole overhaul here. And, you know, getting to a place where I understand that man, to even deserve to be here, you know? I mean, how is that possible? I've only been up here 10 minutes. Anyway, so I'm going to go through the rest of the steps in about 4 minutes. For me, my sponsor has taught me how, in order to practice the third step, that it's an action step. I have to go into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, put my hand up, and let you all know what's going on. And when I do that, I get someone in here with the experience to share with me. And when I do the footwork, God has the outcome. All I got to do is say my prayers, but God has never filled out a job application for me yet. That there's some footwork that I need to do. There came a time when it became necessary for me, you know, and the spiritual principle with the third step for me is faith. There became a time when I had to do the inventory process because I was so uncomfortable clean. I always thought I would become, you know, get a reward, become June Cleaver in recovery. Didn't happen. The man left. And, you know, and I tell people today, I didn't even get Wally and the Beef. I got Bart Simpson and Eldridge. But anyway, you know, through that fourth step, I got to find out who I was. In the fifth step, I got some self-acceptance. I wasn't the worst person in the world. I wasn't the best. That really threw me off. And practicing willingness, which is a spiritual principle of the sixth step, that's one thing I do pray for. Because, you know, the tenth step talks about us with time, being able to back ourselves into a corner we can't get out of clean. And being willing and being open is something that I will ask my higher power to help me with. Those defects, which were absolutely glaring, my God gave me opportunities to deal with all of them. I had to go and get some outside help in order to deal with the anger. The exact nature of my wrongs was self-centered fear, but anger, loneliness, greed, whatever kicked behind it, I've had to go out and do some work outside the program. For me, the seventh step in the spiritual principle is humility. Most days is about, you know, do you want to be happy and loved or do you want to be right? You know, I'm right most of the time. But many, many days, the seventh step for me is, Peggy, just keep your mouth shut. You know, and one of the things I do is practice of the seventh step. Whenever I'm getting in or out of an automobile, I will turn the key and say, God, please just help me to respect other people today. The eighth step was the easiest step because the list came right off my fourth step list. And my daddy was on the top of that list. And so was my oldest son, Virgil. Most of you know that my oldest son tried to take his life several years ago. I had lost my father. He died 4 years ago. And I've been able to make amends, which has taught me that I can't second-guess God about anything. You know, amends are not only going to happen in God's time, they're going to happen in God's way. When my dad died, I was able to put my arms around him and tell him that I loved him, you know, and really understand that he did the very best that he could with what he had to work with. And my oldest son, I ended up advocating for his psychiatric treatment. And what I'm trying to tell y'all is through the ninth step, I grew up in Narcotics Anonymous. That many, many people said, you know, leave that alone. He's got his own higher power. But somehow the ninth step was telling me that restitution was demanded. That's not a word addicts like to hear. And, you know, I committed my oldest son to a mental institution for his senior year in high school. And something began to happen to me. You know, I started to experience serenity in the middle of the biggest storm of my life and started to feel better about myself. You know, I was taking action. You all had taught me how to do footwork. You've taught me how to pray. You've taught me how to meditate. And, you know, I'm here to tell you my son is home with me today, and he's doing real good, and he doesn't want to die anymore either. And it was during that process that I started to feel better about myself. You know, I used to think my nickname was, well, my real name was Dumb Vince. That was like right before I was going to get hit. And during that process of advocating for Virgil and learning how to do the 10th step, you know, showing up for life and being able to say, nah, I'm sorry, but I was wrong and I'm not that person anymore. And that's why the 10th step is positioned where it is. You know, the forgiveness steps have started to work in my life. And I ended up getting the opportunity to go back to school after 25 years. And I graduated from the University of Maryland a couple years back with a double major in criminology and criminal justice. And, you know, I always thought I was stupid. And, you know, there are days when I could still be a bitch, but you can't call me a dumb bitch anymore. And I began this journey of the 11th step, you know. And for me, I was diagnosed with a disease, and I'm going to say it's called fibromyalgia, a few years ago. A disease that's supposed to be crippling. It's God's way of saying, girlfriend, you are 50 years old now. It's time to slow down and listen to me. There are days when I'm in so much physical pain, and that if that pain cycle goes on, I'm hit with depression, panic attacks, chronic fatigue syndrome, and a sleep disorder. And I'm at a place in my recovery now where I've surrendered on a deeper level than I ever imagined. There are days when I cry from the pain. And in the process of learning how to get this conscious contact with my higher power, that it works how I want, told me that I could go back if I wanted to. If I really understood that my God's will for me was to be happy, and that if I really understood that I never made any decisions in my whole life geared towards that, you know, result, that this life would become about just doing the next right thing, asking people what it was if I didn't know, trying to align my will with my higher power so that when an opportunity was presented, it was my job, even if I changed my mind later, to seize it. Because that's what God was placing in front of me. Well, I did have this childhood dream, you know, and I had lost it probably at about 9 years old when I picked up, and I always wanted to be a lawyer. I can remember when I was in, I wanted to be a civil rights lawyer. I can remember when I was in second grade, Brown versus Board of Education was decided, you know, and I actually had a hero, and it was Thurgood Marshall. And in 38 days, I will graduate from Howard Law School. Because I have done nothing but the little bit of footwork that you people taught me how to do. This belongs to Narcotics Anonymous. I'm going to be a criminal defense lawyer, and this year I was selected to be a member of the clinic at Howard, and I have taken defendants to trial all year by myself, and they are all guilty.
Oh, yes!
And I've had a place where I understand the difference between my program and my profession. I learned about ethics in Narcotics Anonymous. The 12th step for me is where it's at, if I had to define my higher power. And I don't know who yours is, but I know this thing works. And I know that if I can stay clean and be a good mother, and I don't have a relationship with men, and I don't have any money, but my life is so spectacular today. I know that, you know, my God, and this is just my God, you know, he's probably going to be watching basketball this afternoon. You know, like one day just look down on this earth like all of us, you know, not just us, like we're so, but everybody, and he said, they don't get it. They don't get that I'm here. They don't get that this path is planned, that everything is absolutely perfect at any given moment, just like it's supposed to be. It's my puzzle, and they don't get it. They don't trust me. And I'm going to do something really, really spectacular so that they do. And there's only going to be some people that are going to get it. But it's going to be like a really big miracle. And what he did, y'all, is he did us. He took the dope fiends and the whores and the drunks and the pimps, and he has elevated us from the gutter, because that's where I was, from mental illness, from complete deprivation, to a place where we can be of service to mankind.
Yeah.
I believe that through the 12th step, by virtue of the 12th step, each and every person in this room has the opportunity to lead an extraordinary life, because that is what has happened to me. So I just want to say thank you. I am truly spiritually refreshed as a result of Narcotics Anonymous, and I am so glad to be alive today. Thank you. I'd like to thank Peggy for helping us. Can we have someone to come up and read just for today?